And now, for our feature presentation.
Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents Don Pendleton's MacVolan. Narrated by Terrence Acil Ford. With performances by David Coyne, Nanette Savard, Richard Rowan, Christopher Graybill, Casey Jones, Karen Carbone, Kate Torrey, Tim Carlin, Thomas Penny, and Mort Shelby. MacVolan number 96, Stolen Arrows.
Soon now, very soon. Trying to act casually, heavily armed CIA operatives strolled through the budding greenery of the South London parkland. No two were dressed alike, but each had a telltale flesh-colored wire trailing from his earplug to the compact transponder clipped to his gun belt. A few smoked, one was eating an ice cream cone, but all were razor-sharp and braced for action. Stopping to tie a shoelace, a man checked the digital readout of the Geiger counter strapped to his wrist. Satisfied for the moment that the combat zone was clear, he signaled into his hidden throat mic to relay the information, then moved on. Scattered across Archbishop's Park, several families had spread checkered blankets on the freshly cut lawns, while children ran along the footpaths, darting in and out of the trimmed hedges and among the strolling pedestrians. Rising like a glass cathedral above the lush trees was the new Archbishop's Hospital, and past the footbridge was the old Baroque-style library, the once clean Scottish granite blocks now stained a dull uniform gray with the passage of the long centuries. Sitting on the steps of the library, a large man was reading a book in Portuguese, the volume positioned to hold down his loose windbreaker and to hide the gun in his shoulder holster.
Falcon, we have contact. Sector 5 Zodiac is approaching the park. Pete, the Zodiac is near. All agents full combat protocol at all times. Stay sharp and wait for my command.
Cirelu Zalhares continued reading his novel, waiting for target identification. The voice on the radio was David Osborne, the CIA operative who had hired his team of mercenaries for this dirty job. But then black ops were what his group did best, and the CIA always paid top dollar. Just then, a teenage girl walked by, her yellow print dress rising high in the river breeze to expose a lot of tanned leg and a hint of lace panties. Nice. Raising his sights, Zalhares admired the fullness of her young body, and finally her face, loose golden blonde hair, framing elfin features. Noticing his attention, the girl paused for a moment and pursed her lips in a controlled smile at the stranger. But as he smiled back, she paled slightly and hurried away, fearfully glancing backward to make sure he wasn't following. Unconcerned by her reaction, Zalhares returned to his reading. Although only in his early 30s, it had been many years since Zalhares could have been called handsome, the network of scars on his face and neck from his line of work reducing his looks to merely striking. Although the black hair and dark skin proclaimed a Spanish ancestry, his sharp eyes were swirls of different subdued colors. Egyptian, the effect was called, although he knew of no such Arab relative in the family tree. Just a genetic fluke, an abstraction that caught the attention of many beautiful women until they met the savage mind behind the beautiful eyes, and their ardor cooled just as quickly as it had flared to life. A small boy walked over to the man and stopped directly in front of him. Hoping the boy would go away, Zalhares did nothing for a minute. But then it was obvious he had to respond. The big man slowly raised his eyes from the book and looked at the child without any emotion.
That's a funny kind of writing, mister. Is it Latin?
Portuguese.
Zalhares closed the book around his finger to keep his place. In spite of the summer warmth, he was wearing expensive gloves on both hands. The leather was so pale that it resembled human skin. The boy tilted his head.
You Portuguese?
Zalhares paused as a well-dressed businessman in a Gucci suit walked into view, holding a briefcase. The killer relaxed at the sight of the alligator leather trim. That wasn't a Zodiac. Those were plain brown leather, as ordinary and plain as humanly possible, virtually invisible in a crowd.
Mister?
I'm from Brazil.
Stay loose, he thought. Don't attract attention from the crowd. Bore the child with details.
The Archbishop Library has the largest collection of books in Portuguese in all of Britain. I come here often for a taste of home.
Don't they speak Brazilian in Brazil? I know I would.
Annoyed, Zalhares controlled his temper.
No, there is no language.
Red alert. We have a Zodiac in the park. Repeat, we have a Zodiac coming home from Sector 2.
That wasn't Osborne, but a member of Zalhares' team, Arturo Mariano, also known as Dog by his many enemies, because of his tendency to bite people in the throat during fights. An expert in Kodokan Judo and high explosives, he was one of the most feared assassins in the S2, the dreaded secret police of Brazil. That was until Cirilo Zalhares had recruited the man from the government and into the Scion, his mercenary unit. As surreptitiously as possible, Zalhares gestured behind the book toward the child standing directly in front of him.
Better get rid of the kid, my friend. The Libyans will be here at any second and we'll have to move.
Keeping his expression neutral, Zalhares leaned forward slightly so that his windbreaker fell open, exposing the silenced Imbel 22 pistol in the holster to his team hidden in the nearby trees.
No, just chase him away. There are too many people around. Killing the brat would only start a riot if someone found the body. The English are very sentimental about their children.
Well, I must be going now.
Zalhares rose to his full height and closed the book. The adult towered over the child like a giant from a fairy tale. The boy didn't move an inch. When the physical intimidation didn't frighten the boy away, Zalhares impatiently tried another tactic.
Would you do me a favor and return this book for me inside? Thank you.
Not late, is it? Billy once asked me to return a book and it was late and I had to pay the fine.
No, it's not late, but I am. My daughter is having a birthday and I'm late for her party. Thank you again.
The boy turned to charge up the flight of stairs into the library.
Goodbye, mister!
Once safely in the crowd, Zalhares walked until two more people slipped into position nearby, never coming close, but now each of them was able to cover the other with gunfire if the need arose. Dressed in slacks and a turtleneck, Minas Pedrosa was a bald giant who sported a drooping red mustache. His companion was a muscular woman who wore gray pleated slacks and a matching vest over a loose black shirt to try to mask her ample chest. In their line of work, the distracting, eye-catching qualities of her curvaceous figure were often a source of consternation for the team. But Georgina Misne was one of the best knife fighters in the world, along with being a superb interrogator, which more than made up for the minor inconvenience of her beauty. Upon reaching a footpath, Zalhares turned into the trees and paused in a pool of shadow. The fourth member of the team, craggy-faced with a short ponytail, stepped out of the greenery. Once an escaping prisoner had foolishly grabbed that hair to try to subdue Arturo Mariano. But the razor blades, hidden inside, had neatly sliced into his fingers. The prisoner had howled at the pain, but when Mariano got hold of him, the screaming really began. Making sure they were alone, the four exchanged pointed glances, then nodded in readiness and checked their weapons. Zalhares thumbed the control in the pocket of his windbreaker to change the throat mic's frequency to the CIA channel.
We're in the clear, Eagle One.
The unit automatically scrambled the broadcast, then shifted to another frequency and code so that even if MI5 or the local police were listening in, they would never be able to decipher the transmission in time to stop what was happening.
How good is a ride, Falcon? Caucasian male, denim pants and shirt, portly mustache, steel-rimmed glasses?
Confirm, Eagle. We will engage. Want anybody alive for questioning, sir? Hello, Eagle. Repeat, please. 10-2.
Falcon, I said not this time. Our psych department says that it'll scare the hell out of those others in their group to have a team simply vanish off the face of the earth. No bodies, no news coverage, just gone. It makes the next batch of killers move a little slower, and thus easier to stop. Terminate with extreme prejudice.
Zalhares frowned on euphemisms like terminate. If the CIA wanted someone killed, how could they be too cowardly to even speak the word? Americans were rich, but foolishly sentimental. A combination he found to be highly conducive for business.
Confirmed. Falcon out.
The rest of the Scion dispersed into the greenery as Zalhares turned toward the street. A short, fat man with metal glasses and tightly carrying a plain leather briefcase stepped quickly from the bus. As he started toward the park, several men rose from parked cars and headed after the plump courier. They were dressed in ridiculously loud sports coats with noticeable lumps under their arms from holstered weapons. Zalhares tried not to frown at the sight of the rank amateurs.
These Libyan fools were a threat to America?
Hurrying down a footpath, the fat man darted into a break in the bushes and disappeared from sight. Only seconds behind, his pursuers quickly followed.
Now, I'm going after him.
Confirm.
Moving with grace, Zalhares slipped through the manicured hedges and entered a small clearing in the heart of the park. There, he saw the four Libyans converge on the fat man, each of them carrying a stun gun or pepper spray. As they tried to circle him, the courier simply dove to the ground, hugging the briefcase. Zalhares and his people charged the circle of Libyans from behind. The men turned from the cringing courier, and the members of the Scion moved like lightning, each choosing a target and ramming a knife upward into the bottom of the jaw to pin the mouth shut. The Libyans tried to pull their weapons, but it was too late. Zalhares grabbed an arm of the biggest man and broke it with a twisting gesture, making him drop the 9mm Glock pistol. Mariano did the same. Pedrosa crushed another man's neck in his bare grip. Mizne stabbed her target with another knife, leaving the blade buried deep in his chest to stem any possible gush of blood from the ruptured heart. Only yards away from cheerful families having a picnic on the village green, the Libyan terrorists died. Rising from the ground, the fat courier nodded at the members of Scion in frank appreciation, then calmly walked away and out of sight. The moment he was gone, the Mercs shifted the bodies behind some bushes instead of lugging them to the open sewer grating deeper in the parkland as they had the other corpses.
Eagle, this is Falcon. All clear.
Confirmed, Falcon. Another good job. And so ends the British cell of the Libyan National Front. Hell of a day, people. 45 terrorists killed and no breakage. Not an agent lost.
Well, sir, a live Zodiac is a hell of a bait. Too good for those sons of bitches to pass up.
Damn straight it is. Good job, Falcon. You handle the bodies, we'll cover the Zodiac to the truck. We'll meet you back at the Savoy Hotel for debriefing.
Sorelu Zalhares looked at his people, and they nodded.
Confirm, Eagle. See you real soon.
But as the Mercs began to leave, a London constable pushed his way into the clearing.
Hey, now, what's going on here?
Sorry, Captain. I was a police officer once myself. But business is business.
Quickly, get him into the bushes. We must not deviate from the plan.
Wait, maybe we can use this dead man to our advantage.
As the plump courier reached the footbridge near the bank of the Thames, six other men moved smoothly from the surrounding crowd to form a protective ring. Standing shoulder to shoulder, the CIA agents kept everybody away from the man and his battered old briefcase. From the footbridge, Osborne keenly watched the milling civilians for any suspicious movements. But nobody seemed to be following the group or paying them any undue attention. Good. Everything seemed to be under control. Although Osborne grudgingly admitted a faint unease at his inability to locate the constable who patrolled the riverbank. But since neither Scotland Yard nor the local bulls were privy to the covert actions here today, the fellow just could be having lunch or was otherwise occupied.
Nest, this is Eagle. All clear. We're on the way with the egg.
We're ready, Eagle. Hawks are live and ready for anything.
Good. Stay alert. See you in five.
Roger that, Eagle. Nest out.
Passing a fish and chips vendor, one of the CIA agents scowled as an elderly woman liberally doused her chips with vinegar and salt.
Why do they call fries chips over here? And what the hell is a toad in the hole? Sounds like something you get from a Thai hooker for $50.
Yeah, so does spotted dick.
Everyone was starting to relax. This was the last Zodiac. They were in the clear now, and it was smooth sailing. The project was finished and a complete success.
So after this, let's hit the McDonald's and Piccadilly Circus. Burgers and fries sound good to me.
Amen, brother.
Oh, please. I haven't eaten American food in 30 years. I'd kill for a hot dog right now.
Then lunch is on the agency. You guys did a hell of a job and deserve a bucket of medals. The least we can do is buy lunch.
Yeah, it's almost over. Only a few more minutes and I'll be free.
At the base of the footbridge, Osborne joined the others and all conversation stopped. Staying in tight formation, the group swung around toward the library to find an unmarked armored truck in the parking lot. The two uniformed guards in the front nodded at Osborne. Inside the vehicle, there was a squat lead safe bolted to the floor and surrounded by six more CIA agents wearing flak jackets and armed with M16 carbines. More weapons hung on the walls, along with medical kits, metal netting, and ABC breathing masks. No needless chances were being taken. As Osborne and his team approached, the six guards assumed a firing stance.
Blue sky, you can stand down.
At the all-clear signal, the guards moved away from the safe as the courier climbed into the truck. Kneeling on the floor, the plump man nervously wiped a sweaty palm on a leg to dry it first, before pressing it to a security pad on top of the box. Inside the safe were several identical briefcases. He placed his own briefcase into a numbered slot.
Done.
It's finally over.
A crackle of static sounded over everybody's earphones, followed by muffled gunfire.
Red alert! We have a situation in the drop zone. A police officer is down! Shit! Dog is hit! We're under attack by an Iraqi backup team! We need immediate assistance, Eagle! Now, goddammit, right now!
Osborne realized why the constable had been missing. Poor bastard.
We're on the way, Falcon. Let's move with a purpose, people!
The CIA agents poured onto the parking lot. As the agents raced around the library, strolling civilians were alarmed at the sight of armed men running through the park. Seconds later, the Cyan came charging around the other side of the library, their weapons drawn. Zalhares adjusted the pre-burner on a U.S. Army M1 flamethrower. Halfway to the armored truck, he crouched against the recoil and pressed the lever on the insulated wand to send out a stream of napalm. The burning lance hit the rear grille of the thick door and sprayed through to fill the vehicle. Covered in flames, the guards and the courier dashed around, slamming into the walls and one another in a blind panic to escape. A few moments later, the ammunition and the rifles began to cook off from the mounting heat. Seated in the front cab, the driver and uniformed guard couldn't see what was happening on the other side of the steel wall in the rear of the truck. Grabbing a Remington shotgun from a ceiling mount, the uniformed guard racked the slide to chamber a shell as the driver pulled a .357 Magnum pistol and threw open the sliding panel covering the conversation grill. The driver accidentally discharged his pistol, blowing a hole in the seat. He threw away the weapon to wave his hands at the flames engulfing his head.
Oh, Jesus Christ!
Tumbling to the cool pavement, the driver beat at the fire with his blistered hands and only vaguely noticed some people coming his way. In the park, Osborne and his people found the dead Libyans and the constable, but there was no sign of the Cyan or anybody else.
Son of a bitch, we've been had! Ness, this is Eagle. Evac, now, Cyan may be compromised. Repeat, Zalhares may have turned. Acknowledge. Ness, do you copy?
Osborne started back toward the library. He could see a plume of dark smoke rising from behind the building and doubled his speed. The CIA operative circled the library. Tendrils of smoke sailed through the air, which carried an aroma oddly reminiscent of roasted pork. The older agents scowled as they identified the stench of burned human flesh mixed with the telltale reek of napalm. The hot wand and pressurized tanks of a flamethrower lay discarded on the pavement. Sprawled nearby were two bodies, the uniformed guard, obviously shot in the head, and what appeared to be the driver, although the face was burned beyond recognition. There was no sign of the armored truck.
The bastards got them. Zalhares and his crew stole the entire shipment of Zodiacs.
Kissel, take two men and sweep the neighborhood for that truck or any more bodies. I'll handle Scotland Yard. Wallace, grab a cab and get your ass to the American Embassy and call the White House.
We'll need top authorization before we can brief the Brits on what's loose in their city.
If then.
Yeah, I know. How do we tell anybody that we just lost a battle in the war on terrorism?
Two members of Cyan drove along a cliff road in Wales, the vast gray expanse of the Atlantic Ocean expanding before them to the horizon. No ships were in sight, and no commercial jet planes flew overhead. Zalhares hadn't even seen another car for the past hour, but he still kept a sharp watch on the sky for any sign of a Harrier jump jet. That's what the British would send, the Merc realized, something that could strike from the sky, then land to check the debris. He knew that the CIA would prefer a shoot-on-sight order, but with the Zodiacs in the possession of the Cyan, that would be far too dangerous. No, the orders would be to contain the Merc unit and to call for reinforcements. But Zalhares had already taken steps to counter the event should it occur. Everything was under control, or rather, it would be in just a little while. Hours passed as the duo in the battered vehicle bounced along the rough roadway. A squat wooden box, roughly the size of an office safe, was securely chained in place on top of a thick bed mattress. Georgina Mizne sat in the passenger seat, adjusting the baby blanket covering the 9mm Uru submachine gun cradled in her arms.
Is this the best you could steal?
It will suffice. According to the map, the turn we're looking for should be somewhere near, Aberystwyth Road. Good.
Welsh? And I thought English was spelled oddly.
The English think of the Welsh the same way we do Bolivians. Idiot cousins who should not be allowed to play with sharp things.
Then they will not work well together to find us. Excellent.
It is why I chose here.
Maneuvering past a pair of wooden markers that bracketed the gravel road, Zalhares started along the steep decline that wound down the face of the cliff. He had heard that the locals often referred to the road as Dead Man's Curve, but compared to the impossible mountain roads of western Brazil, it was a wide highway. Reaching the rocky ground, a side road extended to the sleepy hamlet of Aberystwyth, reminiscent of his home village of Butkaku, to the point of making Zalhares momentarily homesick. The bitter memories of wearing dirty rags for clothes and going to bed hungry for countless years soured the gentle recollection of playing with his brothers and sisters. His mind returned to the task at hand, making money. Soon the gravel became dirt, which abruptly turned into smooth pavement again as the truck rolled along the prehistoric-looking granite dock. Wooden jetties reached out to sea, the thick planks shiny from the constant spray of the waves crashing on the pillions underneath. A motor launch was moored at the farthest slip, guarded by several large men in raincoats. Two were smoking pipes, a third munched on an apple. All were carrying Uzi submachine guns slung beneath their yellow slickers. More guards occupied the launch. A lone figure stood on the foredeck armed with an American surface-to-air Stinger missile, while another watched the skies through compact Russian military binoculars. American weapons, Russian equipment, Australian-registered cargo ship, the smugglers were the United Nations of crime operating in these waters, a hidden cartel that dealt in the oldest currency in history, human misery. Parking the truck a safe distance away, Zalhares got out as Mizne removed the blanket and leveled the Uru out the open window. The men on the dock reacted, then relaxed slightly as Zalhares stepped between them and the unusual weapon.
Who the hell are you?
I hear this town used to mine tin.
Yeah? Now we sell trinkets to the tourists. It's a living.
Code phrases exchanged properly, Zalhares touched a gloved finger to his ear to let Mizne know to stand down. The leader of the sailors pulled out a military radio.
They're here.
Zalhares approved. With so many high-orbit satellites scanning the transmissions of cell phones, it was safer to use a short-range radio for local communications. The signal was too weak to be intercepted by the military satellites and their damn code-breaking computers.
The cargo is in the truck. We're going to need a forklift.
John, Smitty, get humping, boys.
The two men walked off, the third staying near the launch.
So where is the Tullamarine anchored?
Zalhares glanced at the rough sea. There was nothing visible to the horizon.
Just past the 10-kilometer mark. That puts her in international waters. It'll be hard for the Brits to get on board without a bloody good reason.
Then do not give them one.
The other man tried to match Zalhares' intense gaze and had to turn away. His crew were professional smugglers, hard cases, and killers from a dozen countries. But this dark foreigner had the look of a button man, a stone-cold assassin, and the bosun knew that he was out of his league here. With the Uru in hand, Mizne stood guard as they dragged out the heavy wooden crate and hauled it over to the waiting launch. Everybody stayed on the alert until it was firmly lashed into place again. After checking the lashings himself, the bosun climbed back onto the wet jetty.
Clear.
Sailors started to release the mooring lines.
Anything else?
Yes, actually. If there's any trouble, destroy the cargo. Just firing a few rounds into the wood should do the trick. The crate is packed with thermite charges, so it will burn, even if you toss it overboard.
Fair dinkum. You're not going to get a refund, though.
The armed sailors stored the lines in preparation to leave. Only the guard with the stinger didn't join in, his hard eyes never leaving the clear blue sky.
Don't worry about it. We have already gotten our full money's worth from you.
The bosun frowned at that and glanced nervously at the packing crate and the launch. Just what the hell kind of contraband were they smuggling out of England this time? Hal Brignola sat hunched over his desk, looking at a picture of his family, then at the clock, and back to the telephone, silently willing Mac Boland to call. As he stared at the photograph of his wife and two children, he felt a momentary pang of remorse over spending too much time at his job and not enough with his loved ones. Such were the demands of his career. So here he was again, behind his desk at the Justice Department on the weekend. No rest for the wicked. His hand darting out to grab the receiver, Brignola forced himself to wait until the trace circuits finished their work. It only took a few seconds before the small plasma indent screen showed the phone call was coming from a delicatessen in Brooklyn, then switched to a motel in Staten Island, a synagogue in Long Island, gas station in Harlem, Queens, the Empire State Building, 42nd Street subway station, and so on, the location steadily changing every 2 seconds. That meant it was Bolin, and the farm had tracked him down. Any phone call could be traced in time, but Aaron the Bear Kurtzman and the electronic wizards at Stony Man Farm had cooked up a device the size of a pack of cigarettes that gave 100 false identifications along with the legitimate location. It was classified as presidential eyes only, and few people in the world even knew of its existence, much less possessed the scrambler. Mac Bolin had the first model released.
Brignola!
It's me.
Thank God, Stryker. Okay, no time for small talk. What do you know about Project Zodiac?
I've heard rumors. Some sort of doomsday plan from the Cold War.
That's damn close. President Kennedy wanted something to put the fear of God into the Soviets, and the CIA cooked up Project Zodiac. 12 deep cover agents scattered across Europe with wives, jobs, children. They lived undercover for years before receiving their Zodiac code names.
Capricorn, Virgo, and such. Cute. Sounds like the kind of nonsense the CIA thinks is clever.
You hit the nail on the head. Only these sleeper agents weren't saboteurs sent to blow up certain targets. They were equipped with a compact nuclear device that fit into a standard-sized briefcase. Despite their small size, they worked just fine. I've seen the films from the White Sands bomb range. Each of these has a full 1/4 kiloton yield. Just about enough to vaporize 6 city blocks and destroy 6 more with a concussion and heat flash. Very nasty stuff, and dirty as hell.
So if America fell to an enemy sneak attack, these sleeper agents walk their Zodiac to some military target and blow it up. How did they trigger the blast? With a timer or by radio detonator?
Neither. A Zodiac detonates by hand. It's a suicide device. After you set the internal trigger and close the lid, the agent only has to grab the handle tight, and the next time he releases it, the bomb detonates.
The handle is the trigger. So shooting the agent would only set off the Zodiac when he let go. Huh. I never much cared for the dead man's trigger myself. So what went wrong? Someone find a list of the agents? Or did one of them turn and sell a Zodiac to some terrorist group? Or is it worse than that?
It's worse. Last month, the president canceled Project Zodiac. But when the CIA recalled them, they deliberately let the information slip out.
They used the nukes as bait, trolling for terrorists. Okay, what went wrong?
At first, nothing. The CIA was blowing away terrorist groups from across the globe. And then, the perimeter guards stole the truck of bombs right from under their noses.
So the cheap bastards were using mercs again.
You got it. Save a buck, lose the war. Those guys spend more time playing politics and trying to look good to Congress than they do getting the job done.
So now the mercs have their hands on 12 atomic bombs?
No, only 4. The CIA may have fumbled here, but they're not complete fools. Nobody but the mission chief knew that identical armored trucks were going to carry away 1/3 of the collection each. The mercs probably thought they were stealing all 12, but they only got 4.
Only 4?
I know. And that's about the only goddamn good thing about this whole mess.
So why call me? Can't find them?
That's about the size of it. The rendezvous point was in London, and the Brits are having a fit over this going down in their backyard. MI5 has every agent on the hunt, and the city sealed tighter than a virgin's knees on her first date. The SAS and the CIA are tearing the countryside apart trying to find the mercs, but so far, nothing. Meanwhile, the PM is screaming bloody murder at the White House.
Can't say I blame him. If another country had tried that here, we'd tear them a new one. Got an idea on the mercs?
Yes. I'm holding their agency dossier in my hand. They call themselves the Scion. Know them?
Never heard of them before. Give me the basics and have the full dossier sent to a drop site at Grand Central Station.
Consider it done. Okay, their leader is a guy named Cirilo Zalhares.
Wait, I know him. Big Brazilian guy. Used to work for the S2. Worked with Dog Mariano, Minas Pedrosa, and a woman, Georgina something. A real looker. Good with knives.
That's the guy. And it isn't worked with. They're still together. And it's Georgina Misne.
So Zalhares now calls his group the Scion? He always did enjoy grandstanding.
Jesus, Stryker. Have you got every freelance killer in the world locked away in that mental file of yours?
Only the live ones. If memory serves, they were an elite group of mercs, former S2 agents, cashiered out of the service for various crimes against their fellow officers. Murder, rape, blackmail, torture, and worse. During the communications blackout, Phoenix Force had a brief encounter with the S2 when they tried to flee Brazil. They were serious hard cases, tougher than any soldiers of the Mafia or the defunct KGB. Is this intel hard?
Checked and double-checked. We have the Middle East sealed up tight, and the leader of every known terrorist group under surveillance, along with the arms dealers and top smugglers.
Now you want the unknown groups covered. I'm in the right town, then. If anything like this is coming into America, I have contacts in New York who'll get word.
Just one more thing, Stryker. These are kamikaze models. Damage the casing, and even if it's not already armed, the bomb will detonate automatically. The Zodiacs have to be recovered intact and undamaged.
Then the sooner I move, the better the chances they won't be damaged. Talk to you later, Hal.
Just a minute, Stryker. I have a report coming in from the Oval Office. Well, I'll be a son of a bitch. We found them. The Brits got an anonymous tip that an Australian cargo ship, Tula Marine, is ferrying the Zodiacs out of England. The captain has refused to turn around for an inspection, and now they're pretending the radio and cell phone are all dead. RAF fighters are on the way to do a recon. Looks like this was a lot of excitement over nothing, friend. We have them cornered.
Hal, recall those planes. I'm betting that anonymous tip came from Zalhares.
Why would he do that?
Trust me, Hal. It's some sort of trick. It's too soon. Recall those planes.
It's too late. The RAF has already engaged the Scion.
Dropping out of the clouds at 990 miles per hour, the five RAF jet fighters streaked toward the Atlantic Ocean until they were skimming along the water barely above the waves. At these speeds, a single twitch on the joystick or an unexpected thermal, and the multi-million dollar fighters would go straight into the drink. However, at this height, the jets would be practically invisible to any ship's radar.
Wing Commander Lovejoy, this is Vivitar. Permission to fire has been granted by the PM. Repeat, you may arm all weapon systems.
The Prime Minister? Bloody hell.
Roger, Vivitar, confirm. We'll recon first for friendlies, then proceed to disable engines. Over.
Roger and confirmed, Lovejoy. Good hunting. Disable your engines, my arse. We should blow the bastards out of water. Miniature nukes. Just how crazy are those damn Yanks?
Cut the chatter, Shadow. Okay, there it is. I'm going in for an ID. Merlin and Red Cat, stay on my wings. Shadowboxer, Crippen, maintain position.
Dropping out of Mach, the front three Delta-shaped Jaguars began to widely arch around the target zone. Still slowing their approach, the three Jaguars flew past the Tula Marine with their video cameras on automatic. The wide cargo ship was probably moving at its top speed, but compared to the British jet fighters, it might as well have been nailed in place. On the dashboard of his jet fighter, Commander Lovejoy studied the relayed pictures from the belly cameras. The infrared scanners had focused on every human-sized thermal and showed only sharp images of armed men on the decks. No women or children, and nobody who appeared to be held hostage. Nothing but a room-by-room search would truly show if the vessel was completely clear of innocent civilians, but this was the best the RAF pilots could do at the moment. With any luck, the crew would surrender, and the chance of endangering civilians would never arise.
It's the Tula Marine, all right. I can read the bow.
Incoming! Danger, danger, we have incoming! Stinger missiles! Use flares, repeat, use your flares, boys!
The other Jaguars duplicated the tactic, and the Stingers detonated harmlessly in the open air, the expanding halo of shrapnel never even coming close to the speeding jets.
Target is hostile. Repeat, target is hostile. Shadow, take out their radar.
My pleasure, sir. Good shooting, Shadow.
Roger. Thank you, Commander.
The ship's crew was running madly, firing more Stingers and Law and S-Raw rockets. The smugglers seemed to be throwing everything they had into the sky and hoping for a lucky hit.
Shadow and Kribben, keep those Stingers busy while we hit the engine.
Yes, sir.
Lovejoy dropped into an attack profile. Fuel good, weapons hot, no damage. In tight formation, the five jets streaked toward the cargo ship. Soon, smoke was pouring from the portholes.
He's dead in the water, boys. But we don't yet have their full cooperation.
Let's give them two deadheads in the north. That'll put the fear of God into them.
Sounds good. Splash two hot pickles. This is their last chance. Afterward, we start them hard. Dover, take the bow. Red Cat, take the stern. Shadow and I will fly the midship to draw fire. And keep it tight. We want them scared, not dead.
We will comply.
Flying in a staggered line, the fighters raced past the cargo ship, Crippen and Red Cat cutting loose a pair of Sidewinder missiles. With the guidance systems of the missiles deactivated, the deadly heatseekers simply flew straight past the cargo ship.
Damn good shooting, boys. What the deuce? Small arms fire. Oh, surrender already, blokes.
What is the ETA for the Harriers, Commander?
Harriers from the HMS Edward 3 should be here in 5 minutes. RAN helicopters in 15, and a Yank Los Angeles-class submarine will arrive in 30.
30 minutes? Too slow, it'll all be over by... Wait, what the devil are they doing? They're... dumping something overboard.
Do they toss something overboard? Why on earth are they shooting at the wall?
A blinding white light rose from the cold Norwegian sea to fill the universe. The expanding fireball caught Merlin and Shadow Boxer, vaporizing the jet fighters instantly. Just far enough away to survive, it took Crippen and Red Cat a full second to realize what had happened. The pilots desperately punched for the sky. Their ships were shielded from the EMP blast of a nuke, so if they could just get outside the thermal flash and... The physical shockwave of air compressed to the density of stone slammed into the RAF fighters, ripping off their wings, the fuselages crumbling around the men and trapping them inside the smashed jets. The damage activated the ejector seats, crushing the pilots with bloody jelly as the charges hurtled the seats directly into the wadded canopies. A split second later, the ruptured fuel tanks detonated, igniting every missile. Soon, there was nothing remaining but the empty, boiling ocean. It was dark and empty at Mac Bolan's end of the old subway platform, where graffiti covered the walls. The stairs were closed off with a folding iron grating, padlocked into place. The door to the access tunnel was equally protected. Aside from the bank of old payphones, half of them missing altogether, there was nothing and no reason for anybody to go to that section of the subterranean platform, which made it perfect for Bolan's needs.
Hold on, Stryker. Another fax is coming.
I'll wait.
Bolan leaned against the dirty tiled wall. In the executioner's opinion, there was no way the Scion would have been captured so easily. Bolan's combat sense flared, and he felt that he was the center of someone's attention long before hearing the approach of boots on the dirty concrete.
Hey, you!
Turning slowly, Bolan studied the group of six teenagers coming his way. They were shabbily dressed in torn clothing, but the damage seemed to be more deliberate than natural wear and tear. That assessment was compounded by the fact that they were wearing $100 sneakers and $10 pants. Two were smoking, one was chewing gum with his mouth open, and a third was an acne-scarred kid, moving to the beat of the thumping music coming from his stereo headphones, a CD player hanging from a wide leather garrison belt. However, despite their youth, each was smiling at the easy mark standing in front of them, a lone man in a secluded section of the subway without a cop in sight. Stopping a short distance away, the tallest of the group flicked his wrist, and a switchblade snapped into existence at the end of a fist.
Give us your fucking wallet! The watch, too!
Still holding the phone receiver, Bolan turned sideways and lashed out with a shoe, the tip stabbing the boy hard in the stomach. As the rest of the gang stared hard at their intended victim, the executioner gave them a stare from the pits of hell. The would-be predators shifted uneasily under his stern gaze, and most began to back away, splaying their hands in a sign of surrender.
What are you waiting for? Kill that motherfucker!
Stryker, you still there?
Mm-hmm.
Bolan watched as the scene played out. How much authority the gang leader held would decide if blood would be spilled. Did they follow him out of simple fear or respect?
Hey, man, we didn't mean nothing. Be cool. No blood, no foul, right?
Wrong.
You punk-ass bitches leaving? And I'll ace them myself.
Lurching forward, the teen threw an overhand haymaker at Bolan that would have broken bones if it hit. Dropping the receiver, Bolin went under the swing, then stood again, with coiled steel speed, driving two stiff fingers directly into the teenager's armpit. The gang leader staggered backward, tears running down his face, the arm dangling impotently at his side like meat in a butcher's window. Bolin swept back his sports jacket to expose the Beretta 93R riding in a shoulder holster.
Go home, now!
The rest of the gang simply turned and ran, one of them scrambling so fast he slipped on some trash and almost went over the edge of the platform onto the abandoned tracks below. Only the leader sneered hatefully in reply and staggered away, cradling his damaged arm.
Striker!
Right here, Hal.
Bolin drew his Beretta. Reaching up with the weapon, he used the sound suppressor to smash the exposed fluorescent lights overhead. As darkness crashed down around him, Bolin stepped farther into the shadows and leveled the weapon in preparation.
Okay. I just got a report from the president. God damn it, how did you know? The NSA just relayed a message to the Oval Office that the thermal flash of the blast registered only one Zodiac. Not four, just one. Zalharis and his people nuked an entire cargo ship, plus a full wing of RAF jets.
There was a movement behind the iron grating covering the sealed-off stairs. The gray muzzle of a gun stuck out a few inches at about waist level. Bolin did nothing, waiting for the kid to make the choice. In a rush of speed, the teenager stepped into plain view holding a Glock 45 pistol.
Ah! My hand! Fuck you, man!
What I need now is a good description of a Zodiac, with as much detail as possible.
Better than that. The design was taken from the most popular briefcase sold by an upscale luggage manufacturer. I can tell you the exact number of the model the Pentagon used.
Listening closely, the executioner filed away the information as the big fed told him the make and model of the matching briefcase, then how to arm and disarm a Zodiac. The process was slow and complex, but then these weren't battlefield weapons where speed of operation was considered an imperative.
Got it. Thanks, Hal.
Stay sharp, Stryker. These people mean business.
Leaving the subway via the main entrance, the executioner melted into the crowds and walked directly to a major department store downtown. 15 minutes later, he was the proud owner of a brand new leather briefcase and several pieces of impressive-looking electronics. Retreating to a nearby alley, he scuffed up the shiny leather briefcase by rubbing it against a brick wall. Satisfied that it no longer looked brand new, Bolin returned to his car. He plugged a small utility soldering iron into the dashboard outlet. Bolin quickly tore apart the random gadgets he had purchased, assembling an array of electronic components into a maze of wires and circuit boards that wouldn't fool anybody trained in nuclear ordnance, but might do the job on the Scion. According to the CIA dossier, most of Zalharis' people came from farms and had little or no education, aside from military training. They might not be able to discern a mock-up from a working suitcase bomb. More importantly, the weight should be about the same after Bolin installed two blocks of C4 plastique and a fully functioning radio detonator. Bolin might never have any use for the decoy, but it was always wise to plan for any possible contingency. New York City was the nerve center of international crime, and he could find out almost anything if he asked the right people, using the right kind of persuasion. The numbers were already falling on this, and it was time for him to start the hunt for Zalharis.